Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here in my little sheltered area, drinking my cup of coffee, reminiscing about the week and weekend that has just passed. Here to entertain you, make you feel better, enlighten you, and everything that is geek and what's going on this week. I want to say thank you for everybody tuning in every week. Please give us a like, give us a share. If you've got any comments, questions, thoughts, by all means, hit me up. Let me know. We are sponsored by Suzy Q's, who is this brilliant jewelry maker. One-of-a-kind items that no one else around is going to have. Check them out. They're right in the link. They're SuzyQ's.com. They are on Instagram. They are on Facebook. And Suzy's just this bright, cheery rainbow of life and joy. So give her a follow. Check out her stuff. We've ran specials on it before. We may have specials coming up, but it is, and Red sports her earrings all of the time. So regardless of the situation or the occasion, Suzy Q's fits it. Anyway, now, on to this week, what's gone on, and there's some stuff. Oh my God, big breaking news that hit, which we will get to in a moment. But first, what have I been up to? Holy crap. So this weekend, Brett Leader One and I went to see Brad Williams. Now, this isn't the first time that I have seen the stand-up comic Brad Williams. He's absolutely hilarious. I love his stuff. I love his take on life. And he's just like a really good guy. He's very down to earth, and I love just the overall person. And you can kind of tell that in his stand-up, it is him. I mean, I know a lot of comics, and they kind of put themselves, you know, a copy of themselves, or, you know, they don't want to let their inner person out. But I really honestly think Brad is up there. That is Brad. It's not a caricature. So a few years ago, I think it was probably about 2015, I went to one of his shows, and I know this is going to sound weird, but I like to collect little people, okay? I've got pictures with a lot of little people in showbiz, you know, and the only one I'm really missing right now is Peter Dinklage, of course, and I may have spoken about this once or twice. I've even had people look at me and just go, "What's wrong with you?" But I really like to collect little people. And Brad was on the list for a while, but I finally got him a few years ago. Got a picture with him. I didn't, like, pick him up, stick him in a bag, and take him home. I got a picture with him. That's what I mean by, you know, collecting little people. And I get my pictures with him. So the only one right now, and I honestly never expect to collect Peter Dinklage. I honestly think the likelihood of him doing a show or a con, dude, that's got to be like next to impossible. I don't see that happening. At any rate, so I got a picture with him a few years ago. Brett Leader One was nice enough to print it out for me because I don't have a printer. I don't have any of that stuff. Paper is dead. Print is dead. The chance of printing it out. So Brett Leader One prints out this nice glossy picture, and it's been in my Facebook memories, and I probably shared it not that long ago with me and Brad. So he prints it out for us to get it signed. So great. Sounds good. We show up early because we're going to the later show, because I've always found when you're doing like the stand-up shows or like the theater and all that, if you do the later show, they kind of improvise. It's a little more, you know, engaging and a little more fun, a little more risque. So we go to the later showing at Comedy Works, and everything has changed. So since COVID and everything that's gone on, a lot of everything has changed as far as drinking, as far as establishments being open, of course, social distancing. Everything has been and taken into a consideration and into effect. So What ends up happening is we get there early to see if Brad's even signing. And this is before the first show. This is like 20 minutes. 20 minutes before the first show. Because we're going to go over to the pub across the way and, you know, have some cocktails, hang out, get caught up, see what, you know, be human for a change. So as we're sitting there, the door person is all like, yeah, the restaurant inside the comedy place, not serving. The bar, no stand-up, no serving in there. Okay, fine. Is Brad signing? Because that was the big thing. Because Brett Leader 1, of course, wants to get his photo signed. He also wants to pick one up for his buddy. And then mine, of course. And the door person was cheerful, pleasant, happy. He said, no, Brad's not signing. COVID, he's traveling across the country. He recently had a little girl. And it's great. He posted pictures and all that. So we're like, okay, totally understand. So we're like, let's go grab a drink. As we're walking to the bar, luck would have it that Brad is actually walking up at that point. Just ta-da! And totally out of the blue. Oddly enough, I looked right over him. Brett, on the other hand, completely picked him out immediately because evidently he was in like pursuit mode and totally zeroed in on Brad. And he's all like, just goes right up, asks him if he would mind signing. And of course, Brad's like, absolutely. You know, he had no problem signing. And of course, Brett takes out all the pictures and all that. And Brad's like, oh, hey, we've seen each other before and interacted and had a nice little exchange. And it was stellar. Absolutely loved the whole interaction with Brad. And Brad's just such a, like I said, Brad's such a good guy. So, but the story gets more interesting at this point. So Brett and I do our thing. We go over to the pub. We drink. We hang out. We have a good time. Then the four of us go over to the show. And lo and behold, now, while Brett was talking to the door person, they kind of let it slip that Elway was going to be there. And, you know, Brett and I are like, okay, sure. And we knew Brett was like, Brad is a huge Broncos fan. He talks about it on all of the other podcasts and shows that he does. In fact, he even brought it up on BPI when he was doing the phone-in interview on Tuesday. So the door person's like, yeah, Elway will be here with his party. We're like, oh, okay. You know, just kind of just throwing it out there like, oh, okay, sure. So we get there. We for the time's adjusted because originally it was 9:45. It starts at 9. We slam our drinks. Of course, we're going to be late. We got like 10 minutes to get in there. We get in, and as we're waiting, in walks Elway and his whole group, and totally like recognized Elway's wife because it was a few years ago when I was flying out to California. I sat next to him and her in first class on the way out to California. So it was like, oh my God, that's Elway's wife. Oh my God, that's Elway. And Elway walks in. Of course, he's got his mask and everything, but there's no mistake in Elway. He's got that air, that kind of walk about him. So he comes walking in and takes his seat. Of course, you know, I don't bother him. Just leave him be. He's here to see the show. So Brad goes into this whole thing, production, during his stand-up about how much he loves Elway. He's a huge fan. The other stand-up comics that were there also, you know, threw out a couple of Elway jokes. One of them just looks just like Elway, actually. He kind of did the face, and I'm like, oh, yeah, Elway is in there. So Brad does this whole thing with Elway. He actually named his daughter Elway. So, you know, she could be Elle or however they, you know, nicknames work. So he was extremely excited about it and rightfully so. And Elway was great. So the show ends, side's hurting. We're sitting downstairs in the parking garage, hanging out and just talking, bullshitting. And lo and behold, as we're sitting there, the door to the garage, the stairs, opens up, and out walks John. And all of us stop for a moment, look at each other, and go, okay. And as he's walking, he's got this box of stuff, and we're like, hey, John, how's it going? You know, and he was very cordial, very nice. You know, he's on a mission. He's heading to his car. His handler's over there, or security, or whoever he's with. It's not his wife, because evidently she must have left with the rest of their friends. But, yeah, he's just, you know, we compliment him. We were like, you know, can't wait to see the season. You're doing some great choices. You know, what do you say? Because you don't want to go up to him. Hey, can we get a signature? You know, we don't try to get a photo with him. We don't, you know, gush on him like that. But just to just be sitting there, and then, you know, out of door number two comes John Elway. Like, okay. And, you know, it was just one of those surreal moments of like, well, I'll be dipped. That normally doesn't happen. So on our Instagram, I do have the picture of me, Brett Leader 1, and Brad as we're sitting there getting stuff signed. Of course, this is the only time that I'm going to be tall in a picture, because Brett's sitting down and Brad is already kind of shorter in stature. So go check out the picture. I'll probably push it up on on my Facebook page, just as a then and now type of thing, just to benchmark it, but totally worth it. Great night. And this is like one of only three shows this month showing at Comedy Works. So make plans. Go check out Comedy Works, because I don't want to see that venue go away, because I really think, if anything right now, we do need to laugh, and this is probably the best, this is the best medicine. This is what everybody needs. A little break, a little shelter, if you will, and it works. It works well. Not only does it work, but it works well. Now, moving on to what's going on in the Geekverse, and this is not surprising. In fact, we have talked about it over and over again, but one more titan has fallen as New York Comic Con officially cancels. Physical show will go all digital for 2020. Due to the ongoing coronavirus, Reed Pop has announced that New York Comic Con will hold its event digitally this year and is officially partnering with U2 to move everything content-wise there. So this will be interesting. It's going to span from October 8th through the 11th. And they've already announced a lot of the panels and everything else. This is what they've said so far. Stars will bring in epic American gods. CBS All Access will feature the legendary Star Trek universe. DreamWorks Animation will showcase the best of television animation. And Hulu and FX will be also announcing stuff, but nothing official from them. But that's what they've released so far in regards to what's going on. Now, this does not come as a surprise with COVID and everything, but I had hoped that, you know, things would get better, things would improve, we'd see a drastic uptick in, you know, decline in cases, everybody on the mend, and life as we know it. But that is not the case at this time, and my plans and trip to New York is officially canceled now, which makes me sad. No Cat's Deli. So sad. I love that place. And I love New York. It's like one of the places in the world that is unlike, well, I guess, unlike anywhere else, but I guess you can say that about any place. But there's just this feel and vibe about New York, and damn, if I could afford it, yep, that's where I'd be living. For show. But I'm here in beautiful Colorado, second best place, and that's the way it goes. Now, what happens with next year remains to be unseen, as I think right now the only cons, there is an event this weekend coming up called Morbid Curiosities that's going to be in the parking lot of the Stampede in Aurora, and Rocky Mountain Con is still a go from what Tim and I's conversation has been here in Colorado. So that's kind of where everything is sitting at the moment. So that's kind of it. That's con season. Leaky Con, of course, the Harry Potter Con is kaput. And I mean, next year we're already looking at a couple of interesting cons. One, of course, is the Bram Stoker con that's coming to Colorado. LeakyCon has said they will return for Colorado next year, in addition to our normal stuff and, of course, Colorado Festival of Horror, which postponed their inaugural season to next year as well. So there are some shows that look to be enticing, exciting, because, I mean, we're going to go a full year without cons. I mean, I can see it already that we get through the rest of this 2020 train wreck that 2020 is, and I will bet that C2E2 next year in Chicago will also be virtual. That's my bet right now at this point. Unless there's something like extremely radical changes, I don't see C2E2 happening next year either. Just as a hunch. So, what do you do? Yeah, you keep what you're doing. Tuning in for the virtual cons. And it's been fun. I mean, a lot of the stuff, San Diego was interesting, it was enjoyable, and it was a whole lot more fun than I honestly thought it was going to be. So, it worked. It works well. Let's see, what else is going on? So, in TV news, well, more like streaming. This is interesting because I remember watching this show. And back in the day, there was this odd little show, and it ran from 1984 to 1996, which is a lot longer than I had thought it ran. Because I only thought it was a few years, and maybe it was just because I lost it on in the channels or somewhere along the lane. I lost touch with it. But I'm referring to the Spitting Image puppets. Now, you may be familiar with them because they're the same puppets that were used in Land of Confusion in the Genesis video. They had their own show, and it was so weird and twisted because the world was ran by Ed McMahon, Johnny Carson's sidekick, and Ronald Reagan was bedridden and an absolute Fruit Loop. And it was so surreal, and it took so many brilliant shots at society and everything that was going on at the time. So when it premiered and it ran well for the first couple of seasons, and maybe that's why I lost it after the first couple of seasons, because, you know, TV stations move them in time slots. I mean, we've seen it time and time again as, like, you know, Firefly got nailed and Sliders, another show that was a victim to, you know, constantly getting moved around. But when it peaked, it had like 15 million viewers. And that's, you know, no small, you know, change. It's just like, those are some serious diehard fans for some twisted looking Muppets. So now, they're coming back. It looks like the creators and everyone are coming back to run another show, another season. So it's been 24 years, and it's coming to BritBox. So we talked about this a couple weeks ago with the new movie for Red Dwarf, where they're going to be streaming and all this. So BritBox has got this show now, and the pictures that are coming out are just... I honestly think their puppet-making skills have improved dramatically over the last couple of years. But they've already, like, released pictures of, like, Vladimir Putin, Bernie Sanders, Kim Kardashian, of course, the royal family, which was constantly taking pot shots from these guys back in the day. So I can only imagine now with all of the drama, the boys grown, of course. Prince Charles was constantly made fun of. It's really such dark humor, and I mean not all dark, but it was just fun. It was completely different, and you can just see it was dripping with satire of today's commentary and everything. That I just loved it. So this actually really makes me happy, because you only can do so much with the Muppets. At the end of the day, they're still the Muppets, and they have their streaming thing going on right now on Disney. We've watched two episodes, which is all that's out there, and it's not bad. We finally got Muppet Labs in the second episode. Of course, the Swedish Chef is one of their bread and butter go-tos so far, and he should be, because that is easy. That is just easy humor right there. Lay down if you ask me. So this kind of going to the far other side of the spectrum, and I can't wait to see it. Now, there hasn't been a date released yet as far as when it's going to run, but it just being on BritBox, and I'm sure as more information and everything else comes out on this that we will see more. It's just a matter of time before they really get their stride, and I'm sure they just want to proceed cautiously because the world, you know, a little more sensitive than what it used to be, which, you know, you don't want to piss anyone off, but you want, you, dude, we need humor. We need to laugh. We need to laugh hard. And speaking of streaming services, this I have actually dreaded happening. I knew it was coming. We've talked about it. It's sad is what it is. But I as much as I understand it and as much as it enrages me, I get it and I understand. But Disney has announced that they basically Mulan is going direct to their streaming services. And this is all going to happen September 4th. And it's done. It's locked in. And they're moving forward with this plan. The downside. Or actually, hold on. Let's go with the positive. The positive, of course, we get to see Mulan. This is something that all of us have been talking about for at least the last couple of years. Since they broke the news, they're doing the live action, all of us reacted to it, and it was a mixed bag. Because, of course, all of us, you know, Tao, Red, AA, all of us were very cautious about how they were going to do this. We know the dragon was going to be there, so without, you know, no Mushu, no movie, because all of us were dead set against it, because Eddie Murphy kind of, you know, really made the film, and the cat's trying to get some attention. Are you going to say anything today? No, he's not saying anything today. So with a lot of the changes and all of that, it being more of an accurate page from history and a total depiction of the times, we were on board for. And of course, all of the actors are Asian, so we were even more like, okay, so there's no whitewashing. This stands to be an incredible extravaganza. I mean, and of course, we're like totally on board. Now, of course, everything hits, and of course they pushed back the release date because it was supposed to be March, and everything went south, and now Disney, after seeing what has gone on for initial releases with like Scoob and their other few other titles that they've gone directly to their streaming, I think they're going to test the waters, and this is how they're going to do it. Because even though you may have the Disney streaming service, you are still going to have to pay a premium price. So you have your normal $6.99 that you have to pay monthly. And I know a lot of people are still on that free month. And, you know, God bless you. Hold in there as long as you can, because it's only good for a year. So at the end of the year, you've got a decision to make, whether it's to start shelling out the $6.99 or abandon the hope and pray to God you'll be able to stream The Mandalorian somewhere else. That said, $6.99. In addition to that, the cost to watch Mulan is $29.99. And that's the fee. There's no around it. There's no perks. There's no nothing. Just to watch it is $29.99. So think about that. Just to watch it. You don't own it. It's not digitally transferable from one account to another. It's not added to any form of library. Just to watch it is $29.99. And that's the part that really enrages me. That's where I get a little just pissed. Because there's no reason. There's really no reason for it. And I know they need to make their money. And I know that Disney, the mouse, has always got his hand out to get his fair share. Make no mistake about it. As much as they say they love the fans and everybody else, at the end of the day, Disney's looking to collect the paycheck, just like everybody else. So while I get it and I understand the financial side of it, I don't it doesn't sit well with me. And if this is, and trust me, everybody's watching this. Fox is watching this. Oh, wait, Fox is owned by Disney. Okay, Universal is watching this? Wait, isn't most of the stuff went to Fox, gone from them? And I mean, it gets a little convoluted. And I know the only ones that are really kind of holding back is Sony, because Sony is probably just chomping at the bit because they've got their own streaming service with their televisions that they sell and their own library that is available digitally for the first year, again, free. But if you want the subscription service and have access to all of their 4K stuff, that's out there. So everybody is on pins and needles, anxiously waiting to see how this turns out. We've already announced that Bill and Ted are going to go directly to video, and that'll probably be, I think, a substantially lower price than $29.99. But, you know, after taxes and everything, you're into $30. I don't know. I mean, is it any worse than going to the theater? I mean, granted, for $20, you know, that's two people right there. Treats, snacks, something to entertain your time while you're sitting there in between, you know, the previews and everything else. I mean, it's not unheard of to be in between, you know, $40, maybe $50 when you go to a film. I don't know. Like I said, this is where I get a little agitated. I think for that price, you should at least be able to keep the film. I know a lot of us have blind purchased tons of movies and videos, but I can tell you that if I had blind bought frickin' Lion King, I would be irate. I would burn Disney down for Aladdin if I had blind bought that. The streaming service helped a lot, and it continues to entice me. It keeps me coming back. Granted, I haven't seen them go as deep into the library as I would hoped, but again, I think that they're trying to pace themselves. The first year, they want to give everything out there because, again, everybody's still on that first free year. Disney's just kind of waiting. So, I want to see the film. Don't get me wrong. And will I pop for the $30 to see it? I don't know. That remains to be seen. May see a meat and potatoes review of it. I don't know, because I don't know if Meat and Taters is interested in shelling out $30. I know, you know, they're anxious to finally see a movie because there hasn't been any. So we'll keep you in the loop on this, but I'm anxious. And damn it, Disney, why can't you just not do it? And speaking of streaming services, that brings us to this week's Shakedown. This week's Shakedown is brought to you by nobody. So if you'd like to sponsor the breakdown that happens every week, or Shakedown, however you want to throw it out there, my take on whatever strikes my fancy. And this week, actually, what has struck my fancy is the, I kind of made fun of it, made light of it, if you will, the Wizards show, the movie that landed on Netflix, and it's not a film, but it's 10 episodes of the Troll Hunters saga. It's a continuation. And this story, Guillermo del Toro has produced one of the most enticing and original and just enriching stories I can imagine for a long time. Especially for characters and everything that are not established in any other medium. This is something that they created with the Troll Hunters, and it has expanded to different story arcs, different characters. Of course, you know, when this started, it was, we're like, okay, this is cool, kind of dark, kind of interesting, and it really fit with Del Toro's, like, bizarre, and, you know, just, it really felt awesome, especially when you, like, think of, like, the Night Market and things like that, these creatures that are running around, gnomes, scourges of the earth, just, you know, the cute little plays off of just history and lore, which Del Toro does absolutely better than anybody else that I can think of right now in the industry. I mean, when I watch Trollhunters, I can it really is like a page out of Del Toro's film Pan's Labyrinth. It really just has that unique character. You don't know what they're going to produce. You don't know what they're going to see. So when this series premiered, like way back in 2016, I was enticed. I was excited and just was I almost put it off just because I didn't want to be completely let down or just be crushed. And the next thing I know, you know, it runs its three seasons and then it kind of ended abruptly. And of course, a lot of it surrounded also with Anton Yelchin, who was Chekhov, who tragically passed away a while, you know, like while they were doing the production. Uh-oh. Studio line. Okay, we'll just mute the studio line for now while I finish with you guys, and then I got business. So anyway, 2016, everything, you know, looks good for the Trollhunters, and it was so well done, and just I loved it. And then of course we get all of these other characters as they expand the universe for Trollhunters. Now finally we're at Wizards, which kind of seems like they're tying everything up from the other series, and each series has lasted about three seasons. Even the one that they just finished with the aliens that come down to visit Arcadia, and you know, they of course went three seasons, which was spectacular. Totally did not. I honestly, my expectations again, I was like, eh, this is just gonna be okay. And it was more than okay. It was stupendous. Oh my God. I loved the characters. I loved everything, the depiction of the planets and everything that was going on beyond the Earth. It was just, I was like, how are they going to do this? How are you mingling, you know, science with, you know, mystic arts? And they just blended it all so well together that it was honestly seamless. So now we get the Wizards, and we get kind of I don't want to say a swan song, but it is definitely the final, it feels like the final loop for everything. We do get kind of some closure for the Trollhunter story. His arc and everything kind of comes to an interesting footnote, an end? I don't want to say it's an end, because I honestly see the way this series, the way the first 10 episodes ended, I'm expecting this to go three seasons. Because even Three Below, when it ended, I was kind of like, you know, it's the same thing. I honestly am expecting more to happen. But the Jim character in Trollhunters, I think we may have seen an end to his story arc. But there's still much more to see. Because we finally get more interactions with Merlin, we get more with Morgana, we get a lot of Camelot, and just the whole characterization of everybody is so exquisite. It really is. And I have to take my hat off to Del Toro. If you haven't watched the Trollhunters series, you really should. Even just from the standpoint of just something to watch, background noise. It may not be for everybody, but I think you're going to find it a lot more entertaining and enjoyable than you would give it credit for. Because it really hits a note. The characters and just the relationships that they create between all of them, you can just, you know, it really gives you kind of a feel. It gives you the feels. Good case of the feels. And there are casualties. There are consequences. There are things that you're like, wow, this is really a kid show. And you know what? For the first time, I honestly have to say that I'm glad that this is something that they're taking head on, that shows there are consequences for your decisions. It's not easy to be a hero. And even though you think you know the story, you don't. Because you see, especially in Wizards, how through time things can change. And even though you're brought up thinking it's a certain way and you have these certain expectations or this view, then you find out what really happened, the rest of the story, if you will. So this was, you know, a pleasant surprise. I wasn't honestly expecting to have a shakedown on this, but after binging it last night, it moved me. Because I had something else in mind for this week's Shakedown, but you know what? I decided after watching it, this was way more deserving of a spotlight, of attention. And let's face it, there's not a whole lot going on right now with Netflix and movies and all of that that are worth the time, because I already blazed through Umbrella Academy and Transformers, and now I've got nothing left to watch. So, I mean, it's down to the point where I'm desperate and I'm watching Kill David Hasselhoff. Ugh. But Troll Hunters evolving to Wizards is absolutely brilliant. Put it in your queue. Add it to your watch list. Pause me right now and just go. I'll wait. Okay, hopefully that was enough time. Go, add it to your queue. Start watching it as soon as you're finished listening to me. Not while you're listening to me. Add it to the list because you want to finish, you know, this podcast, of course, because you got to have your priorities. And that's this week's Shakedown. I'll be back next week with who knows what. And if you'd like to sponsor the Shakedown, please, by all means, send me a message and it's all yours. Now, speaking of shows, there's a couple of big ones coming to an end this week. Of course, one is Stargirl, and if you want to know my take on that, I will have that up later this week. Spoiler-free, of course, but a full kind of shakedown of the entire season, what's excited me, what's been kind of meh, and my overall take, because there were moments that I doubted the legitimacy of the show and just what was going to happen. So I think you may find my take surprisingly uplifting. I'm curious to see how they do finally end it tonight for the first season. And it just, oh, so yeah, can't wait. And then, of course, the other show that is coming to an end is this 2-hour series finale is going to be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as we see a final epitaph, kind of end closure, if you will, to what has gone on to the wonderful team that is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is completely gone off the rails from when you look at where it was to where it has ended is so different. And I really wish that they had gone down this road sooner, but we've already talked about that a couple of times. Anyway, the 2-hour series finale, they're saying that there may be some endgame kind of footage or kind of footnote. I don't know how they're going to do that because they're still in the 80s. And I'm digging the opening vibe because it looks like Tempest, the video game from way back in the day. Anyway, I really, really enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. It's been nonstop and I really, really like it. But to all things. And if you're a bigger Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan, the collectibles are actually going to be up for auction. This November, you can bid on over 500 props and costumes from, well, let's face it, this is Marvel's longest running TV series. So this, you know what, when I looked at it, it reminded me of when I was at C2E2 right at the end of Winter Soldier. And because they were auctioning off a lot of all the Captain America stuff, the motorcycle, the costume, the shield, all of it, Agents of Hydra tanks. And I really am pissed that I missed out on a couple of things. And it was just out of reach. It seemed like every item that I was bidding on was just outside of what I was comfortable paying for it. And looking back, I should have just bit the bullet and just said, screw it. I want it, and I'm going to take it. So now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you do have the chance. And this is, it's going to be available starting August 14th. If you go to propstore.com/Marvel, you will be able to kind of preview the gallery as far as what's up for sale. propstore.com/Marvel. So there are some interesting stuff because there's like different costumes. We've got Max Shotgun Axe, which I really, really want. because it just is awesome. You put an axe on the end of a shotgun. That's some serious business. Don't mess with that. They're estimating $10,000 to $15,000 on that. The one that I really am kind of chomping at, and it's the Ghost Rider fan in me, is they do have the Robbie Reyes Ghost Rider costume up for grabs. And, of course, they're estimating on that one $8,000 to $10,000 as well. It kind of seems like all of the costumes are ranging anywhere from $5,000 to $8,000 to start with, and I mean, it's not like a bad thing, especially if you are, you know, into the screen used stuff, and I'm a victim of it, just as a lot of other collectors are, that you just want that one piece to just add to the collection. There are some other things that will be a little bit lower in price. Another one that I've been looking at was Coulson's Light Up Shield Badge, which, of course, they're already estimating $2,500 to $3,500 in price on that, which, okay, maybe. That might be a little bit much, in my opinion, especially for just a little metal prop that, you know, probably has just a small little LED. I could probably build it and make it look better than what it is, but it's still screen use. I'm sure it comes with a COA, and for the diehard shield collectors out there, definitely all of this is a must, in my opinion. And I'm not even that big of a, like, diehard Shield fan. I just appreciate the show. The comic series is, it was okay. I'm more about, you know, the old school Steranko, Nick Fury, Agent of Shield than anything more recent. But again, starting August 14th, you'll be able to go check them out. And then, of course, the auction to take place in November. They haven't given an exact date in November when, but I'm sure there's also other props and things that they haven't released yet that will be added to it. So in just a few days, you'll be able to go and check it out. What else in TV news? Oh, okay. So while this caught my eye, it wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. So just the other day, I saw this. I just stopped. My jaw dropped, and I just sat there thinking for a while. I don't even know how much time had lapsed. I just was sitting there. What did it to me was the trailer for Christopher Eccleston's return as the Ninth Doctor. And I was like, oh my God. So that's how we're going to save Jodie Whittaker's season, is bring back a doctor that they probably won't be able to write for either. Because let's face it, this season, the last season, wasn't Jodie's fault. She really, if there's one doctor now that has been more victim to the writing than any other doctor, it's got to be her. I really feel for her. Because her doctor is kind of fun. Plucky, energetic, all over the place, BB in a boxcar. But I do like her depiction of the doctor. Unfortunately, the writing just has failed to really spotlight her, but we won't go down that checkered road. But to my dismay, the Christopher Eccleston trailer was put out there by Big Finish. They are, you know, the ones that bring us the radio dramas and the books on tape and all of that. Evidently, Christopher Eccleston is returning for a new series of audio adventures, and this is how they were going to tease it. So I'm like, oh. And what the bright side about this is, bright side and bad side, the bad side is he's not coming back to TV. And maybe we will see him, maybe with him kind of gingerly putting his toe back into the pool with the audio dramas, he will get that bug to want to get back in front of the camera. Because even when they did the 50th anniversary, he was not on board. He kind of was like pushed it off. Like, I don't know what my character would do. So the production on this is going to be 12 adventures that they're due to release in a 4-box set series, and this is going to be hitting May 21st. So what all the stories are and everything that's involved, none of that's been released, just the teaser that Eccleston is back in the box. And, you know, I know who my doctors are, but I do have to stop and take pause because what Eccleston did was perfect. He was the right choice for the right time, for the perfect environment. It was the perfect storm for the Time Lord, and we wouldn't have a doctor if it wasn't for him, because we know that it would have epically failed. And I feel bad because I really did want to see more of his doctor, because just the conflict inside of him, his rage and everything that had gone on and all of the questions from the Time War, it just he wanted to show the gentler side, and you saw it from time to time, especially when, you know, he goes back to World War II during the Blitz and he comes across Dr. Constantine and that whole story. And it was you can just see him kind of like, yeah, he wants to be a kinder, gentler doctor, and he was still a little bitter. But the whole journey that we go on with Eccleston is probably one of the best story arcs for a doctor that I can think of. And I know at the end, when he regenerated, I was like, nope, 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 nope. Much to my surprise, of course, Tennant ends up becoming even better of a doctor. But it still leaves me wonder, if Eccleston had the same amount of time that Tennant did, would that have reversed? Could Eccleston be the ultimate doctor for the new decade? I don't know. I just kind of softball pitched that out there. Don't at me. I know. And we already know Red's opinion of Tennant, so I do not share that, but I can appreciate it. I understand. And I'm sure if Red was here, she would have already pulled out her, well. What else is going on? Oh, in comic book news. Oh, my God. So last week, let's back up a sec. Last week, I talked about titles that were getting canceled by Marvel. And, of course, my big rub is that both of the Conan titles are getting smoked. So this week, DC finally, instead of cutting titles, have decided to do layoffs. The DC is basically cutting a lot of its management. So far, one of the big names to note is the editor-in-chief, Bob Harris, has been sacked. He is done. So the I mean, and none of this really comes as a big surprise, as there were leaks and there were kind of like rumblings as far as what was going on over in DC's camp with the merger for Warner Media and with, I think it's, I can't think of, AT&T. There we go. Sorry, it took me a minute to catch up. So AT&T with the merger with Warner and everything that is going on, this really doesn't come as much of a surprise as they reorganize. And I know when Marvel got absorbed by Disney, they, for the most part, left everybody intact. There were some shifts and things like that. But for the most part, Disney kept Marvel intact because I don't think they knew what to do with Marvel. And they didn't have anyone in a management capacity to take over. But with DC, and you already have, you know, all of Warner and everything in that, and AT&T just basically was like, okay, well, you guys got a lot of overlap, so we're going to start sacking people. And this doesn't come as much as a surprise, especially with the DC streaming service. And this is where a lot of the casualties have happened, as they've cut a lot of the departments, as everything starts to shift towards HBO Max. And again, we saw this coming, we talked about it, and it was... it's sad because nobody needs to be without work right now, and it's already a tight niche business over on that side of the fence. So I can only imagine the anxiety that a lot of people are feeling right now. And with HBO Max, and maybe some of these people will get absorbed, reabsorbed back into the HBO side as they look to expand a lot of their content. I mean, because let's look at it. We've got Doom Patrol Titans, a Young Justice, and Harley Quinn. These are the staples right now for the DC streaming service. That was it. So, you know, not the greatest presence. And of course you got to do, you know, reruns and rehashes and all that, but all of that also is on Netflix. And some of it was also still on the Disney side, with which made no sense to me, but whatever. So now you've got Stargirl, which is a success. It's been renewed, and that's crossing over to the HBO Max side. And of course it's only a matter of time before we see the CW also fall victim to this, as again, more overlap. So this, I don't know. I don't know how much of an impact we're going to see, and maybe we will see a better production, because I mean, Swamp Thing didn't even make it past three episodes. Everybody saw that and just was like, oh no, this is garbage. Just this is a garbage fire. Just get rid of it now and call it good. And that they did. So the other side of DC, probably one of the biggest hit was the DC Direct, the company's in-house merchandising and collectibles manufacturer. This division, basically, after 22 years, has been shut down. So where's the merch going? Who's going to be taking care of all of this stuff? Have we seen the end of this? I mean, I don't. No, I mean, they are rumoring that Warner Brothers Consumer Products are going to be taking more of an active role in the DC merchandising. But for now, the DC Direct stuff is kaput, which that hurts, because I mean, the statue lines, the bombshell statues, all of the figures. I mean, McFarlane just got his DC figure line started. So I don't know if we're going to see like all of the figures shift to McFarlane's side of the fence. Did he negotiate some kind of freaking badass deal to get all of the figure lines? But really hurts to me is the statues, because I really do like the statues that DC has produced over the years. And even if you look at the Batman Black and Whites, which I am completely dedicated to, and I wouldn't say I have a complete run, but I have most of the ones that I want. To see that line just kind of come to its end, and I guess it makes sense with McFarlane being the final statue to, you know, benchmark 100, that's, I mean, okay. I guess that's one hell of a way to go out, but there's so many questions, and I know as time goes on, we'll see more, but immediately you read something like this, and you're like, but I want my toys. I mean, how many Green Lantern figures do I really need? The answer is all of them. The DC spokesperson did decline to comment on the changes, but did say that they're still planning their August 22nd online event called DC Fandom, which is set to showcase stars from DC's films, TVs, and comic book worlds. And that may change. They probably didn't want to rock the boat completely right out of the gate as they sacked everybody. So this could change. We may or may not see DC do this, but it does stand to reason with everything going on. And I was honestly surprised that we hadn't seen more of this going on after Marvel cutting titles and all of that. And I can just see more artists doing more work to cover other titles and books, and they're going to find that one Ron Lim and have him just do everything. It's most likely going to be Jim Lee. But you know what? I'm fine with Jim Lee doing every DC book. Yes. Sign me up for that. That about wraps the news up. There's been some other rumblings of stuff going on, but I don't have anything concrete, and most of it's just been rumors. And I hate reporting on like rumors and stuff, especially when dealing with like the Tron storyline and everything else going on with that. So I'll wait till I get something more concrete, because that one's closer to home and right in the heart. So that means it's time for, yes, you guessed it, restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. Every week I like to visit and reminisce about the restaurants that helped me survive the COVID, because face it, I don't want to cook every single day. I get bored. I can only have chicken every day for so long. So last week made me think and reminded me of a restaurant, because it's not always about dinner or lunch. And let's face it, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And I had to revisit one of my favorite places. This hails back from the days of when, in a previous life, I was an entirely different person, a couple entirely different people back then. But when I worked at Ultimate Electronics on Colorado Boulevard, there was this great little Mexican restaurant that we would always go to for breakfast burritos. And I'm talking about Little Anita's New Mexican Food. It is probably the most tastiest, wonderful way to start the day that I could possibly imagine. And just even sitting here thinking about it, I can just imagine the smells of opening up the little container, taking off the lid that has that delectable breakfast burrito smothered in green chili and cheese, waiting there anxiously for me to devour it. Yeah, I'm going to have to go get one after I get done with this. The problem is, of course, it's a breakfast burrito, and I know not everybody wants to start breakfast, and there are other choices out there, and I get that, and I understand completely, because there is other breakfast burrito choices out there. But I think before you go and try them or go and do the same old thing, why wouldn't you want to try something else? Because the key to a good breakfast burrito over the years that I have found, it's not the egg and all that, but it is the spices and the ingredients that are used. And what stands out to me most of all about Little Anita's is their green chili. I can't find an equal to it. I don't know how they make it or what they do, but it is delicious. They even have, because I even wanted to try their green chili just basically on anything. I wanted to just buy a tub of it and slather it on just about everything back in the day. And evidently, they may have been thinking the same lines that I was, because they also do have a green chili cheeseburger that is available at both of their locations. I mean, I always frequent the one on Colorado Boulevard. It was 1550 South Colorado Boulevard, and it was just, like I said, a couple blocks away from the Ultimate that I was working at back in the day, and I did resent being moved, because that means I had to like go to a Burger King for breakfast after leaving there, and it's just not the same. Little Anita's, whatever they do for that green chili, is absolutely mouth-watering deliciousness. So if you haven't tried them, by all means, please give them a try. And maybe you don't want to do the breakfast burrito, you can go to them online. They both have a web page, and in addition to their own Facebook page. They are open right now, but I don't believe that they're open for dine-in. When I went by, because I would get up, I would still try, you know, you try to keep your routine for working out and trying to keep your shape from going other than what it is. And, you know, heading over to Little Anita's on the bike was not outside of the norm. It was actually kind of nice. So after a nice little morning ride, swing by Little Anita's, grab a breakfast burrito, take it home, and just gorge myself. So they have the one that's in Denver on Colorado Boulevard, and there's also one in Greenwood Village. They are doing DoorDash and pickup, of course. And I do believe Uber Eats has also got them. Check out their menu online. Check on their Facebook page. Give them a like. They've got some delicious-looking photos. I'm looking at it right now. Really want, they got a green chili stew. Ooh, okay. I might have to go try that now. So many choices, but like I said, start out with their breakfast burrito. That's where I started with them, and it was just like the gateway to so many more delicious experiences, so many more opportunities to just fill my stomach full of goodness. Yes, Little Anita's. Go check them out. Yeah. And that concludes my restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. What else? I think that about wraps up this week. I know it's been kind of a lighter week than normal, and I don't like that. But, I mean, with everything going on, I can completely understand. I know we still have a little time before Lucifer lands this month, in addition to The Boys, which is next month. I'll most likely do a rewatch of Umbrella Academy again. I've already watched it twice. And yeah, I can't really get enough of that show. So if you've got questions, comments, or anything on your mind, please, by all means, shoot me a message. Give us a like. Give us a share. Go over and check out our sponsor, Suzy Q's, who's waiting to ship you your order today. So in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.